Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, May 24th, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. I have Yvonne Bo with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So we've got a number of topics lined up for you today, but we thought we'd start out with a little bit of feedback from last week. I will leave the feedback anonymous. The person had two questions. Number one is for you, Yvonne, and number two is for me.
Anybody I know who sent the feedback, or
you have not met this person directly.
Okay, all right.
But you have. Okay. But you have spoken to them.
Okay.
Anyway, question number. Should we do the question for me first, or the question for you first?
You.
Okay, so the question for me: are you still driving the same Saturn you drove back in the day, the one that had the cheese slice in it? And so my answer to that is, well, first of all, yes, it is the same Saturn, but it was not a cheese slice. It was a package of Kraft cheese singles that I kept.
That's right.
I had in the car for, you know, probably at least 5 years. I don't know. And then I believe it was this person who sent the feedback who actually took the cheese out of my car and threw it away, which, you know, I still miss that cheese today. You know, it was in the back of the car you know.
No, nobody else does, but, you know.
You know,
that was just, you know, just so everybody knows, understands, the reason why the packet of cheese was there, it wasn't that Sam is that insane and he just bought a pack of cheese and threw it back there. He had gone shopping in the supermarket. Obviously, he bought the pack of cheese. It must have slipped out of his bag, fell there. And, well, just like everything else that Sam sometimes drops somewhere, it stayed there.
Yeah, well,
it definitely.
And you know, this does confuse me a little bit, because I, you know, if you'd asked me, I would have said the cheese was from the Ford Taurus I had like a decade previously, but maybe there was multiple cheeses.
There wasn't, as I recall. I mean, I think, no, because you had cars in between the Ford Taurus and
I had a Toyota Corolla in between.
Right. And I actually got on the Saturn without the cheese, because if I actually had gotten on the Saturn with the cheese, I would have thrown it out.
Well, you know, the Taurus also had a nest of printer paper in the back.
Well, it had some other stuff, but I don't know. The Taurus had other problems. The Taurus had the lake of floating soda in the middle, into which one day you jammed a soda into it and then got me all wet by doing so.
Wasn't that a rental car?
No, that was your car.
Okay, yes, okay. So, yeah, there was a lake of soda, and I put a new soda in it, and it splashed all over Yvonne, and he didn't particularly like that. I think we were on the way to Canada or something.
Yes, your memory serves correct, yes.
Yeah, so...
Anyway, all right.
The other question, which is for Yvonne, we'll see. I'll just ask the question, and then you can go from there. What has Yvonne done that would prevent him from running for office?
Okay. Okay, well, I have admitted to this. I've been I've been to places of prostitution a number of times. I think that would probably, you know, not go over well. What else? I mean, I've had some run-ins with the tax authorities. I mean, I've resolved those, but I'm sure that somebody will bring them up and say that that's probably, like, you know, some reason why that's, you know, that would, you know, why that would, you know, they would find something wrong with it, I'm sure, and they'll just make a big case out of it. I've had relatives that have been convicted of federal crimes. Okay,
there you go.
Just the IRS issues and probably a lot of my partying probably would come back somehow and just
a little,
know,
partying.
A lot of partying. I mean, you know, just that I'm sure would probably a lot of people find objectionable. That's okay. What I think. Or they would figure out a way how to make it blow it out of proportion or something.
Okay. Well, I hope that answers our listener's question. So let's move on to our first real topic, which is there's a lot of developments this week in terms of Google Android stuff. One that Yvonne had in mind was that there was a study done that, you know, just for what was it for? Was it for the month of April?
It's a second quarter of the year. So, or, you know, first quarter of the year. I don't know.
So for some period of time, the Droid 4 phone outsold the iPhone.
That's in the U.S.
In the U.S. Yes.
Just to clarify, in the rest of the world, no. But in the U.S.
So let's talk about that one a bit before we hit the other Google-ish stuff.
Well, I think that what it shows is that, well, the one thing that was cool about the statistic was is the a lot of the pickup in terms of market also came from Windows Mobile, okay, which is just getting crushed because, you know, basically,
this you know, Windows Mobile.
Yes. Well, a lot of the makers that are making – a lot of people are making phones right now that are Droid phones used to be making Windows Mobile phones.
Well, right.
It was Samsung. It was Motorola. It was HTC. Those were the biggest makers of Windows Mobile phones.
And that's where you know, I was sort of saying nobody – Windows is – it's almost taken for granted that Windows isn't a player here anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, people are just abandoning it in droves. I mean, you know, it's just because it sucked. Nobody liked it. The only reason a lot of these smartphone makers were using it is because they didn't have that many other choices, okay? And all of a sudden, you know, Google placed a choice in front of them of how we could, you know, of an operating system that works a lot better than the other one, and they just, you know.
And free.
Yeah, and free, and just decided, okay, I'll take it. You know, so that's been the thing with that. You know, I found a chart here where it shows this in the U.S. where right now Android in the first quarter of 2010, so that would be through March, they have slightly under 20%, 30% of the market. Apple has slightly over 20%. Windows Mobile went from in the Q1 of 2009 having 22% of the smartphone market. Okay. To right now, 8% around there. So they've been getting just crushed right now. And a lot of those gains have gone to Android. So, you know, it's just...
So one of the questions here, and I'll admit to not paying super close attention, was the total here all Android phones versus the iPhone, or just specifically the one?
Correct.
Model?
It was all Android phones. Okay, so that is one of the reasons why, you know, it was the all different Android phones. And the one thing about it is that, I mean, even the research shows that this is a product, actually, for the most part, of the fact that Apple is only selling this through AT&T, because they did a survey, you know, here it is. Let me find this here. But the NPD findings suggest that the sales of the phone could be even higher in the U.S. if the device was available on other carriers' networks, such as Verizon Wireless. And there was a survey apparently that I think like close to like 80% of Verizon Wireless customers wanted to buy an iPhone, okay? Right. Some such percentage. So that is why I think that pretty much by this summer, that deal with AT&T will be over, because it's really – right now, at first, it allowed them to do certain things, but right now it's actually becoming a hindrance, okay? A big one. And they need to get out of that deal no matter what. So that's – you know, that's where that is right now. And this is all different models. It mentioned that I don't know, the number of models that came out in the first quarter. You had the HTC Droid, you had the Motorola Droid, the Nexus One, the T-Mobile One. There was a number. No single one of them actually sold more than the iPhone. It's just that, you know, when you added them all up,
well,
in the OS, that's how they became.
And also installed base, they're still a lot smaller. But you know, the fact that the monthly or quarterly sales are starting to beat it, it indicates that they are on a potential path to keep up if things to catch up if things don't change. And you know, fundamentally, I've heard people talk about, you know, This is another one of those cases where this is set up to be a nice, big, huge competitive rivalry here, where, you know, there are a lot of, and this brings into some of the stuff that was announced at Google I.O., I guess, there are additional enhancements being announced for Android. The approaches are very different, too, in terms of, iPhone being, here's your experience, it's controlled, you know, everything's settled, it's, you know, whatever. Android's, you get a bit more freedom, you get a bit more customization, perhaps at the exchange of a little bit of stability. But there's audiences for both of those things. And the fact that both of these companies are seemingly taking this stuff very, very seriously and pushing ahead very, very strongly in terms of the technology, I think we mentioned this a few weeks back. This is going to be awesome because the competition is going to force both of them to
innovate their asses out their asses. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the other significant thing that I was thinking about was, oh, what the hell was the damn thing? It just slipped out of my mind. Oh man, I hate. Don't you hate when that happens? Ah, oh, this idea I had
there. So, I mean, anyway, there have been some reports with the developments in the last few weeks saying, hey, Android's leapfrogging the iPhone in terms of technology and, in terms of sales, in terms of other stuff. And, once again, there was one of these emails to Steve Jobs saying, is this true? And, of course, he's like, no. But because we're due to have, an iPhone upgrade, over the summer, and there have been, leaks of what the fourth generation iPhone is going to look like. And of course they announced a bit about the software, and they made a purchase that indicates they might be going in the direction on an over the cloud version of iTunes. So there's all kinds of interesting stuff happening on both sides of this fence. And I'm just hoping that in the end it means we're going to have a whole lot of really kick-ass, smartphones.
Well, and even add to that HP actually finally wound up buying Palm as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Which that was a big development, and that gives a very nice, OS for phones, a significant capital to grow that business. So that's
and of course it's not going to just be phones. With everybody seeing how well the iPad's doing, all of these things are going to jump over into the tablet space too.
Right, and I think that was a very smart acquisition by my old employer. The fact that they did that, I think that if you were going to remain competitive against these rivals, you got to do this. And now I remembered what the heck I was trying to say earlier was that the phone that Android has grown. Not from selling the Nexus One, which you remember how it came out. It hasn't really sold much. It sold through because that was my concern originally. Nexus One came. I'm like, what the hell is Google trying to do? They're trying to subvert what I thought was going to be their success. Their success has been with the partnerships with these other manufacturers to use their OS in order to build phones. And that's why I was like, thinking all of a sudden that Google's you can't play both games, and I haven't seen Google really pedal or push so much the Nexus One last few months.
And they've backed up a little bit, like the you used to be able to buy those on a website independent of a carrier, and you can't anymore.
You can't have to go
to a carrier even for those. So I think this is almost like they're trying to push. It's almost like it's a technology demonstration of them trying to push, okay, here's how we think it should be to try to encourage the other folks to do things like that, as opposed to that's really what they want to sell. I don't know. That's just – or it could just be something
and the marketing has been
work.
Well, this is one thing that I also didn't understand. The marketing has been pretty good. I did not understand. I thought originally – and this was my mistake. When Motorola came out with a Verizon Droid, I thought that the Droid – branding that they were using was exclusive to Motorola, and I realize that it isn't. This is a Google branding for Droid. They're using it for all their phones. It's either whether it's an HTC Droid or it's a Motorola Droid. I thought it was a little bit strange, because now I'm like, all of a sudden it just confused me. I figured that when it first came out, if it was a Droid, I thought it was just a Motorola, and now I figured that it's not.
Okay, well, Let's take a break, and we'll be back moving on to a non-technology subject. We'll be back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
So, during the break, Yvonne pointed out that we didn't actually talk about the other announcement at the Google announcements at the Google I/O conference besides, you know, how it might have touched on Android. So, Yvonne, what were the other big things out of there?
Well, the big one that I recall is this whole thing on the Google TV thing. Now,
yes. I admit, now, I almost didn't pay attention to that. I'm like, oh, okay, there's another...
Well, there's been a lot of press on the Google TV thing, but yeah. But see, here's the thing. Sony said that apparently they're going to start building in the software into their televisions, okay? But the thing is, I got to admit, I tried to look up what the hell does it do. It says it's a software to try to integrate the TV web experience with the TV, with live television viewing, kind of like what the Apple TV and some others have tried to do, or the TiVo or things. But I haven't seen how it actually works, so I can't really say whether this is all great or not. I mean, so many people have tried to do this so far. I know that this is probably pick up better in the future, but so far right now it hasn't really.
Well, you know, and a lot of the things here, I just think are fundamental. I don't know. Look, here's my thing. When I'm going to watch a show, I want to watch a show. It's a passive experience. I want to turn it on. I want to let it run for half an hour or an hour or whatever. And I may be doing other things. Like, you know, I've mentioned before in the show.
On a laptop.
I do almost all of my television watching at this point on the computer. We don't even have a traditional television set up anywhere in the house. We have a projector that we use every once in a while for, like, actually mostly for DVDs and stuff, very rarely for television. But, you know, and we've got TiVos and whatever. So, like, I watch TV on the TiVo via the Sling Box on my computer. I will watch things I've downloaded on the computer. But, you know, I'm not going to want to... And yeah, a computer can be good for augmenting searches and stuff like that. And I think folks like TiVo have done that really well, where they've got like a guide that you can drill in on directors and subjects and all kinds of neat stuff and find what you're interested in.
But pretty cool.
But fundamentally, you know, anybody who's after the things that sort of integrate the two together, so you're sort of, oh, I'm watching something and I see something interesting, so I click on it and then I go over to the web and I see this and blah, blah. I don't want to do that, you know. I mean, I'm all about television on the computer, but these sort of hybrid things, I so far have yet to see the appeal of any of them. I mean, I can see the potential appeal to advertisers who want to have you be able to click on the trash can you see on the sitcom and go to where you can buy the trash can, but I don't see the real appeal to, like, people watching. Like, I don't know, they're interactive experiences and they're passive experiences and they're different kinds of things. You know, I interact with the web all the time. I watch short little videos there. I do things. I play games occasionally, and those are interactive. But you know, if I'm watching, you know, a TV show, I want to watch the freaking TV show.
We have a traditional TV setup here, you know, with a DVR and a thing and stuff. And I normally will watch it. I mean, sometimes I'll have the laptop nearby in order to look up stuff and whatever. But I got to be honest with you. I wouldn't want to block on the screen what I am watching.
Right.
With a web browsing. That's why I have a laptop. Okay. I mean, I want the fucking program up there. Okay. It's why I don't watch it on the damn computer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, you know, now,
Well, even me on the computer. I mean, like, I've got the TV in a little window, but yeah, absolutely. If I'm looking up something relevant to what I'm watching on TV, I don't want it in the same window as where I'm watching the show. I'm going to put it somewhere separate on the side so that I can pay attention to both.
Now, whether some additional interactivity, like videos on demand or other things or whatever, in order to get some more interactive video, whether that's a good thing, well, then I like that. I mean, I have some interactive features with my Apple TV and my DVR that I use, you know, sometimes. But for the most part, I want to be just watching the program that I got, you know. It was like, you know, that's why I got the fucking thing. So anyway, but we'll see. I don't know. I think that, you know, they will merge somewhat over time, but right now, I don't know. None of these experiments have worked really well so far, so
I think I look at some of these things and say, okay, you know, basically what you're trying to do is, it looks to me like the kind of stuff TiVo's already done, except
right.
throwing somebody like Google behind it with a lot more cash
to
push it through. Like, I mean, the latest iterations of TiVo, and I have a pretty old one here. I don't even have the newest versions, but I mean, it integrates, you know, broadcast TV or whatever cable you've got going on, with all sorts of internet sources, with stream, with Netflix, with Amazon, with whatever, so that you can be there and say, you know, you can grab your Netflix movie and watch it directly from that box. Or, you know, whatever. Even you can search like video podcasts and things like that, and all bring them together into the same place. And so part of what they're trying to do is unify that video experience, so you can use your little search and you can set up to record or download all of these things together, so that you don't have to care. Like, you know, you can get your show off your cable connection if you have your cable connection, or you can pull it in off the internet if that's where you want to get it from. But it all comes into one central hub, and that actually kind of makes sense to me. Now, for me, my central hub is my computer, but yes. You know, I could see that making sense, and like, I think TiVo's already tried to do it. Their latest iteration apparently does a lot of that and does it pretty well, but. You know, they're a small, struggling company that's always, a little bit behind where people feel they should be in terms of their speed of innovation and all that kind of other stuff. If you have somebody like Google take that effort seriously, they could do some really cool stuff and bring it out there and take the kind of stuff that TiVo has been doing, take it to the next level and make something really good. You could say the same thing about Apple, of course, but you know, they've called their Apple TV project a sort of a toy, you know, hobby project, and they haven't been throwing that full level of resources at it. It would be interesting to see how that
Given the competitive nature between those two guys, I would not be surprised if all of a sudden that just went out the fucking window the last couple of days.
I could see that changing. I could also see what they're doing with the iPad converging with what they were doing with the Apple TV. I mean, yep. you can combine a lot of those two things together. I mean, you could see, yeah, you can see some convergence in those areas, and they could take some of what they've done in Apple TV, apply it to the iPad, and vice versa. I mean, there's interesting stuff to be done here still.
You know, I got to admit one thing about all these developments. Tech got so boring for a while. Okay, you know, I mean, Microsoft's this hegemony is like everybody else was out. I mean, nobody could do a fucking new thing. This is so damn cool that we've got all these fucking companies right now duking it out again to try to innovate, you know, to make more stuff. I like this. This is fun.
Yeah, all it's going to mean is all kinds of, you know, cool new crap.
Shit.
You know,
that's right. Yes,
and to raise really briefly one of my old bugaboos, the media companies have to get out of the way. You know, because in the past, they've been the thing slowing down a lot of these developments in terms of, you know, how restrictive their contracts are in terms of how you can distribute their content in one way or another. And if you, like, I even heard in some cases, like, some of the music stuff, you know, people wanting to bring, you know, wireless version of iTunes or the equivalent or whatever, it's a whole different set of contracts. You know, and a whole right. different set of whatever, and not to mention the whole international bullshit about, like, you know, having to negotiate whole separate distribution agreements for every locale and everything like that. It's like, you know, all of this stuff, you know, it just gets in the way of the innovation that could be happening here. And, you know, of course, the entertainment industry is going to, you know, continue to be drawn kicking and screaming into everything and not want to do anything innovative. But, you know, in the end, yeah, that if they don't do it, other people will. And you'll be getting content that's made specifically for these platforms and completely bypassing the old media infrastructure. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
Okay. Time for another break. And this time, I promise we actually will come back after the poem of the week and talk about something that's not tech. Okay, we'll be back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tel Motel.
Layover by Angie Reiner. Here's a taste of Chicago. 14 people willing to ride with the dogs. Looking for heaven, party of three. Reading Collapse in low-impact sneakers. How's that for pretense? I can always recognize your poor legs coming down the stairs. Another one needs a pusher. There are so many kinds of bumps. In the moment prior to the tightening of your ability, there was this attempt at ritualized sanity. French onion soup on the floor. A desolate bra. How many hours behind are you?
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And as Yvonne hums, we are back. So welcome back. We are here. For the next couple of segments, we had kind of divided it up as we've got two different idiots to talk about.
Okay, which idiot are we going to talk about first?
Let's do Colorado first, and then we'll follow that up with where's he from? Kentucky. Anyway, go.
I'll talk about idiot number one. It's, you know, there was I posted this on my Facebook page for those of you who were there. If you want to like be friends with me, so you can see these posts when I post them. You know, you could send me a friend request. But you know, so I go and I'm reading the Puerto Rican newspaper a couple of days ago, and there is a Puerto Rican that lives in Idaho who is running for Congress. Okay, and he's being opposed by some other guy who is being supported by Sarah Palin. Okay, all right, I guess because he must be a teabagger or something, whatever. So he goes, and there's a little debate between the two candidates. They're both running for a Republican, you know, for the Republican nomination. There's a little debate, and somebody from the audience asks a question. I guess knowing that the guy is from Puerto Rico, asks him about Puerto Rican statehood and what he thinks about that. And he says that although he's for it, he doesn't think this is the right time. That the political situation in Puerto Rico, given some of the other other issues, this is not the proper time to go about it. That maybe later this would be a good idea, but that just he supports it, but this is not the current good time right now. To which the moron Vaughn Ward pretty much responds that you know, the United States having 50 states can't accept other countries right now into the United States. And the guy tries to explain to him how Puerto Rico is part of the United States, and his response was that he responded that he really didn't care. Okay, to a burst of laughter from the entire audience, who were like looking at this exchange, it's like, is he kidding? I mean, is this guy just such an idiot? So yeah, so basically, and Sarah Palin is backing this wonderful, smart man, you know, who obviously is running for Congress. You know, this is, you know, Anyway, needless to say, I was just a little bit, you know.
Well, you know.
Well, in Puerto Rico, it made the papers like very big. You know, it's like, yeah, people were like, fuck. You know, this is the morons we got to deal with.
But, you know, it's Idaho. You know, probably most of the people there don't care either.
It may well be, but, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, doesn't anybody in this fucking country know anything about the fucking country? Apparently not. Why am I even asking that? Okay, all right. Skip that question.
Okay, so unless you got more on him, we can move on to our second guy.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about Rand Paul, who is the son of Ron Paul, who ran for president and is a congressman from Texas. His son is running for Senate in Kentucky. It is Kentucky, right? Am I right?
Is it Kentucky? I believe you're right. It is Kentucky, yes.
Anyway, I'm going to take the unpopular point here and actually defend him a little bit. But let's – the background is he won his primary race, and then he started doing some national media interviews. And, you know, on one of them in particular – he was asked about the civil rights law from the 1960s, 64, I think. I don't know. Anyway, and he mentioned that, you know, he was opposed to certain aspects of what that law did. Specifically, he didn't think government should have the power to intervene and require private entities not to discriminate. Now, I want to be clear here. You know, he said he very much so the government should not discriminate. The government should not be involved in that kind of thing. He was against things like Jim Crow laws that enforced discrimination at the governmental level, but that private entities should not be forced to discriminate. So, for instance, the typical example of the Southern lunch counters and the like, where you had one set of places where whites could go and one set of places that blacks could go and never the twain shall meet. You know, he's like, you know, if you're a private company, you should be able to do whatever you want with your stuff. And of course, this blew up because, you know, this viewpoint is, for the most part, completely outside the current mainstream of thought.
Well, but let's talk about the reason why he talks about that. I will tell you that I'm even finding myself defending the guy a little bit because I kind of understand what he's – I don't think the guy is saying it for being racist at all. I actually believe that he constitutionally believes that because this is not business that goes across – is not interstate commerce, because of those reasons that constitutionally he believes that is not a regulation can be passed by Congress.
In this case, I'm not sure he was even bringing up constitutional arguments. I think he was bringing up – I mean, look, this is standard – libertarian talk, and he is a libertarian.
Exactly. Now, he's a libertarian.
Now there is some evidence. Yeah, like okay, let's put it this way. A lot of racists in the '60s used these type of arguments to argue against the civil rights laws. They used federalism against the civil rights laws, and they used a libertarian type,
correct,
no government arguments against it. And in the case of many, if not a huge, vast proportion of them, they didn't really give a rat's ass about federalism. They didn't really give a rat's ass about the limits of government intervention in general.
They were just looking for a fucking way to be racist.
Yes, and to continue the existing system. Now, the fact that that is true, the fact that there are many people who use these arguments disingenuously, does not mean that there aren't people out there who use them legitimately.
Now, exactly.
So, you know, and I am very sympathetic and have in the past stated an agreement to his exact statement, you know, that in general, I think there are many things that are wrong that should not be illegal, that, you know, if people do them, they're stupid, they're immoral, they're whatever, but it should not be illegal.
And they should lose business, and they should be,
exactly.
Yeah, I wouldn't patronize a business that does that, for example, et cetera, and so forth. But the question is whether it's, you know, whether that makes it illegal. Now, having said that, right now, those laws have been held as constitutional. And so, therefore, I'm like, right now, I am of the thinking that I'm like, as long as we can, I mean, I am with barring that from happening. I don't have a problem with it. Now, you want to have a constitutional debate whether that the U.S. Constitution permits doing that? That's another story.
I don't think the constitutional argument is interesting. The interesting one is it okay to pass laws that put those kind of restrictions in place? And of course, the follow-on questions, of course, to somebody like him would, of course, be, well, should the government have the power to set a minimum wage on private industry? Should the government be able to, require the testing of foods for healthfulness? Should the government be required to do all sorts of things?
He will probably argue no to all of those.
And if he's consistent, he would. Now, there's been some evidence that he is not entirely consistent on his
legal. Well, then if he's not consistent, then he's a fucking weasel. He should fucking stick his fucking.
Well, right, and his father. Some of the stuff that came out in the campaign, and for those of you who remember, I was a big fan of Ron Paul. But about somewhere in the middle of the campaign, a bunch of things came out about, you know, his association with various racists in the past, and you know, I'm sort of like, okay, well then in that case, never mind.
Never mind, right?
You know, but same. May be true here. I don't know. I don't know what's in his heart. But it is a completely legitimate, potential, self-consistent, ideological position to come at to say that, you know, government just shouldn't be involved in any of this. Now, having said that, the sort of where American political thought is so far away from that at this point. That, you know, having someone going out there and advocating this stuff, of course he's going to get piled on. Whether it's a civil rights law, which frankly, look, you know, regardless of what, I mean, on the one hand, it's refreshing to see a politician actually like speak his mind about something. But from a political point of view, I mean, my God, you know, this would be. Right? I mean, are you an idiot? Like, even if you believe this stuff, you gotta know that saying it out loud is gonna be trouble, right?
It's like me going, like I said, why don't I run for office? And I'm like, well, you know, Mr. Bo, have you been to places of prostitution? Yes, many. I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm like, I know that answer ain't gonna go over too well.
Anyway, you know, and on one hand, I'm glad he's, you know, sort of telling the truth, although he put out a statement sort of backing off a lot from what he was saying, or clarifying, I should say, and sort of specifying that, you know, if he was elected today, no, he would not advocate for the repeal of the law, blah, 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 you know. But, you know, fundamentally, like, how far off we are right now from sort of a perfect libertarian utopia. You just can't get from here to there. Now, having said that, I like the idea of someone in office who in general leans towards those principles, if they are tempered with a little bit of reality in terms of, you know, if you're looking at, you could do this or you could do that, you know, maybe the solution that involves a little bit less government might be okay. I don't know. And I like Rand Paul in terms of, you know, in terms of foreign policy. He's very much in terms of the, you know, we really shouldn't be involved in a bunch of these things. And I don't mind that attitude, really. It's again, if it's kept consistent, you know, but what he's shown himself to be here, and a lot of people have used these words, is just not ready for prime time. I mean, he honestly, I think, had no idea when he went on the Rachel Maddow show and was asked some of these questions that answering in this way would, like, cause people to go apeshit. You know, I mean, I think he honestly was just like, well, okay, I'll tell you what I think about that. And again, I'm torn here. On the one hand, I'm like, oh, wow, a politician that's actually not afraid to say the unpopular things they believe. On the other hand, you know, you'd think
this doesn't work in this country, okay? You know, everybody still, like, for example, I defended a couple of years ago Howard Dean when he went on his crazy rant. Nobody liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, he fucking went off. I thought it was honest. I thought it was refreshing. He fucking didn't win the nomination.
Well,
and mostly because of that fucking thing.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know. I think in general, like, I see nothing here that I've seen about Rand Paul so far that makes me like, oh my God, I hate this man. But, you know, it definitely, I don't know. And I've heard some troubling things about it. Like, if he really was pure libertarian down the line, I'd feel better. But I've heard a few things about some areas where he is actually in favor of some fairly significant state involvement in certain things. And I'm wondering, where's that coming from? And again, like, I'm not sure, you know, if you'd asked me 10, 15 years ago in, you know, my more idealistic days, I guess, I would have been all over, you know, yes, the pure libertarian, blah, blah, blah. No, government shouldn't do this. No, government shouldn't do that. Government shouldn't do this. You know, and then, you know, in the end, more recently, I'm like, you know, I don't think government should do that either. However, it's sometimes maybe a little necessary, or it gets you the results. It's sort of the pure libertarian position isn't about if you follow no government intervention, you will get the best possible result. And I've seen a lot of arguments against it framed in that way. And I think that's incorrect because, you know, libertarians aren't necessarily saying that a world with minimalist government intervention leads to the best possible results in terms of, you know, healthcare or education or, you know, the overall well-being of the country or whatever measure you might do. No, it's more coming from a fundamental point of view of feeling that the very nature of government intervention is at its core evil. So even if it resulted in something good, it's still wrong to do it because you have to do something evil to get there. Right. And, so, and like, yeah, like for just to take the prototypical example, taxes. There's a fundamental feeling there that taxes are theft because they are taking money from you involuntarily and spending it on things that you did not choose to spend it on. And so it's not a question of are taking taxes and spending them the most efficient way to have a transportation system for the country. That's not the question for a true libertarian. It's more, well, taxes are evil, so that should be off the table, and we have to figure out a solution without that, even if doing that would potentially lead to a better road. You know, and you know, the more, you know, the as you go through it, like, I don't know. And that's very appealing. It's very simplistic. It's very whatever. But on the other hand, you can look at it as saying, okay, look, even if you're trying to maximize individual freedom in terms of maximizing the amount of liberty that individuals have available to them, from an individual point of view, if you want to maximize that across the board, then having a complete prohibition of interferences on liberty might actually not be the best way to do that. And if you actually start looking at it from a utilitarian point of view, saying, hey, you know, look, if you guarantee a minimum standard of living, let's say, that the government is going to come in and support and provide a safety net, then yes, in order to achieve that, you have to take away some level of liberty from everybody by taking some taxes away from them. But on the other hand, you're taking all of the people who would be unable to do things and you're giving them the ability to have liberty that they wouldn't otherwise have to do. So maybe on net, it's better. Anyways, some complicated things. And I think, you know, Rand Paul, whatever, whatever he believes
his name is,
it is just politically an idiot by, and just,
Yes.
He has to figure out when to keep his
and
mouth
he shut. May be a real idiot as well.
He may be. I don't know. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll have one more segment when we get back.
What do you get when two housewives produce an online poetry journal? Poems celebrating dishwater, breastfeeding, and lunar phases? Quick trips to the pool boy? Maybe. But they like to believe they offer much more than that. There's no telling what you'll get at the No-Tell Motel. But I hear sneaking out and keeping everything hush-hush is kind of sexy, and they're hot for discretion. Having it all keeps our two housewives awfully busy, so they like to stop and smell the posies, spend quality time with their poets, which is why their rendezvous lasts a full 7 days, a new poem each weekday. Each year they slip their room key to 52 poets and indulge in 260 poems. Their spouse's misfortunes are your gains. Meet with them daily at notellmotel.org. They'll be in room 5C, sipping the latest cocktail recommended in Martha Stewart's Living, Scribbling Marginalia.
And we're back for one last segment. It'll probably be pretty quick. We wanted to quickly mention the oil spill is still happening.
Yep.
You know,
they're incompetent. They're idiots.
Somebody
was talking the other day about they're worried that there were some laws that limited the fucking liability that BP had. I got to tell you something right now. I'm just like, I don't know what the hell the fucking caps are, but I don't care if we're going to bankrupt this fucking company from this fucking oil spill, but these motherfuckers, they got to pay everything out their fucking ass. Well,
the thing is where the cap was actually really pretty low. I think it was like in the millions. It was like $75 million or something.
Yeah.
And the damage is going to add up to way more than that.
They'll blow that out of the water. And I'm like, honestly, the damage probably be enough that the fucking company, you know, taken over by the U.S. taxpayers, to be honest with you, at the rate it's going.
Well,
at the rate this is fucking going, let me see. If this fucking oil comes down here to where I live and they fuck up the South Florida tourism industry, how much fucking money is that going to cost?
Yeah, well, one thing is, you know, the oil's not even there yet. It may not get there. There's a chance. There might get there. It might not get there. But, you know, the Florida government is already talking about it, which is potentially already scaring some people away. But you know, here's the thing here. The oil spill happened. They've been fairly slow to mobilize to containment and things to stop it. The estimates that were coming out about how much oil was being spilled are now known to be way, way, way less than what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. They do finally have some things in place that are slowing it a little bit, but nowhere close to stopping it.
Right.
They're talking about the oil potentially getting into the loop current in the Gulf. It hasn't quite gotten there yet, but if it does, that potentially spreads it out a lot more. Although it thins it out too as it goes. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, why is the government not stepping in more forcefully? They're still essentially letting BP take the lead on most of what's going on here.
Well, the problem is why that is, because I mean, we don't,
they're the ones that have expertise.
Exactly. I mean, you know,
of course there are various folks on the Russian side of things that say, look, we know how to deal with these. We've dealt with several of them in the past. They're
coming. Some foreign teams. There's a big team from Abu Dhabi that's actually coming over
now. No, but I was referring to the specific Russian proposal, which they apparently admitted to doing several times to cap oil spills like this, which is literally they nuke it.
I'll take that. Fuck it. Fucking stop the thing. Fuck it. Do it. Fucking do it.
Yeah, so, but apparently the Russians did that a couple times, which is interesting. But,
what are the deleterious effects of that proposal, though?
I'm sure there are a bunch. It's probably trading one bad set of environmental effects for another.
Another? Yeah. Fuck. Shit. Oh, fuck.
I mean, come on. You're talking about setting off a nuke in
what? I don't know. It is an attractive idea. I mean, I don't know, but gosh.
But anyway, so yeah, so they're still trying to figure out what the hell to do, and You keep looking at the satellite picture and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And another set of commenters pointed out that, you know, one reason why you haven't seen as many pictures of like dead and dying wildlife that you have at some other much smaller oil spills is actually that the area this occurred in is already relatively dead. Because of the runoff from the Mississippi River, apparently has killed huge sections of the Gulf already because it's fairly toxic. So you are starting to see that wildlife effect, but not as big as before because we've already screwed up that part of the world, you know?
Oh, well, I guess that may be good news.
We talked again before, you know, fundamentally, if you're going to have this kind of drilling out there, this kind of thing will happen occasionally. And the question here is it worth it? I mean, you know, bottom line, like, and this is another thing Rand Paul got in trouble for, is saying, you know, why is government getting on BP like this? It seems like interference with private industry. And
because they're fucking incompetent.
And I think he followed up with maybe sometimes we should just, you know, admit that, you know, hey, accidents happen. He's sort of stupid for saying it in that way. But again, that's the truth. I mean, if you are going to have
accidents
this kind of
do drive, happen, I agree. But their fucking total incompetence has added to this whole fucking thing being worse. Okay? Well,
and the other question, which we'll know at some point in the past is, or I guess in the future, not we'll know in the past. Anyway,
yeah, because...
Was there some kind of negligence that led to this in the first place? Because accidents do happen, but it seems like accidents happen a lot more often if, say, people are cutting corners on safety regulations or things like that.
It just seems that also, like, accidents happen a lot to fucking BP, you know?
Oh, what else has happened recently? I don't know this history.
They had a huge refinery blast in Houston that killed I don't know how many fucking people. They've had a couple of other large accidents over the last 5 years. And so it's just like, you know, fuck, why the hell do these fucking cocksuckers keep having so many fucking accidents? You know, it's like once it's an accident, you know, three times the fucking pattern.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Well, I'm guessing that they will find that there are ties to even where there are regulations, how well they've been enforced over the last couple decades and things like that. Because, you know, we know that during the last administration, one of the general themes was really cutting back on enforcement. Like even when regulations were in place, you know, saying, we don't really have to check, you know, and I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is either.
In Texas City, they had an enormous fucking refinery explosion. It killed 15 workers, injured 170 others. The thing they said, people that were nearby, it felt like a fucking nuclear bomb had been dropped in town, okay? It was one hell of a big fucking explosion, okay? So that was a big one they had. So I don't know. It's just a fucking company. Anyway, I don't know. Well, we'll see what happens.
I don't know. As much as I say, well, you know, we're regulations involved, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. Like, if you ask me what the right answer is, I'm not sure I'd say, you know, I don't want to do drilling. I think we probably need some drilling. And I
think that there are safer ways of doing the drilling, and I think that maybe just the oversight wasn't as good. And I think that we need to have, obviously, far more equipment for a response in case of an emergency, in case something, an accident does happen, in order to be able to frickin', you know, control the spill far more quickly, I guess, especially at such depths.
Yeah, I don't know. But at the same time, if you try to work out the... Whenever you have a potentially rare event and are trying to work out the cost benefits for how much it would cost to guard against the rare event, you know, there's a point at which you're like, you know, this could happen, but it's so unlikely. It's not worth it to spend, you know, X millions of dollars.
I don't think it's that unlikely. It's not that unlikely, first of all. The second thing is that the kind of damage we're talking about, It's not that unlikely. And the second thing is that the kind of damage that it can cause, the cost, okay, you know, is so overwhelming that it probably would behoove us to spend more money in actually being prepared than to have to deal with a mess that comes from all the damage from it.
Yeah, potentially. And also people pointed out in this case that they may have made this much, much worse by trying to put out the fire that originated. You know, basically what happened here was there was a fire on the oil rig.
Right.
Then the fire prevention or firefighters or whatever came, poured lots of water on the thing,
right,
and basically destabilized it and sunk it.
Right.
And if they had just said, you know, there's a fire, let's let it burn out, none of this may have happened.
Hmm. So that's even a big problem in terms of we didn't have even the right emergency response.
Yeah, and I don't know how true that is. That's one that's one report I read. Who knows? I'm not
okay. You
know, haven't studied.
Well, anyway, all right. Well, I was going to mention just one thing here in the end. Okay. I don't know. Have you ever watched Lost?
I have watched Lost, and look, here's where I am with Lost. I did not watch the first couple seasons. I picked it up in the middle somewhere. I've watched like the last couple seasons. I am watching this season, but I'm watching it like delayed on TiVo, so like I'm 2 months behind. So I know tonight they're having the final episode, and so I'm like, I'm watching.
What's the big deal with a show? I've never watched a single episode, but you know, I've read about the show, and I don't get it. What's the big deal with a fucking show?
Well,
what could be so interesting in a fucking? I mean, it looks like 6 years of Gilligan's Island.
You know, I've also heard it compared to what's that book with the they make you read in high school where the kids get stranded somewhere?
Robinson Crusoe?
No, not that one. They end up forming Lord of the Flies. Here's what it is. Yes, there are people lost on an island, but the whole thing is that weird things start happening to them, and over the course of a few seasons, you start finding out more and more about the mystery of what's behind the weird things. What, you know, what caused the plane crash in the first place? What's causing all the weird things to happen to the people? And so it's not about like just, you know, the dynamics of a bunch of people on an island. It's about figuring out the past history that's behind this. You know, what is there something supernatural going on? Is it some weird scientific experiment from the 60s? What is it? And what's the backstory of all these characters? So you find out more and more about what happened to all of the characters before they were on the island and things like that. So it's all about peeling back the layers of the onion of like, okay, here's what obviously happened on the first day, but then as each episode progresses, you find more and more things that aren't quite what they seemed, and there are more and more weird things that were occurring. Then, oh, okay, well, what's up with that then? And that's where it comes from. It's all about the like figuring out the mystery and what weird things are going on and all of that kind of stuff. And you know, so some of the whole thing with the last episode coming up is, you know, people are like, okay, will all the mysteries be solved? Will we know what really was going on? Or will it be, you know, something that falls flat?
Well, you know, the one thing is that, I don't know, for me reading what the heck the show was about, it just seemed, you know, I liked the movie Castaway, okay? You know, I thought it was good. I mean, it was longish.
Is that the one with the Wilson?
Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Sure.
See,
I'm trying to think, how the hell do you stretch that into fucking six seasons of TV beyond me.
So here's the thing. It's entirely not like that. Because, like, in that movie, you know, he was stranded on an island, and then he lived, and he figured out how to live, and then he was rescued. You know, so imagine in that movie, if after, like, the first week or so on the island, he found the wreckage of an old building. And then inside the old building, he found some videotapes that were like 30 years old. But then on the videotapes, there was something relating to what happened to him just now. And then and then his little volleyball starts talking to him.
There was a lot of science fiction. Oh, so that's why. Well, that's why I don't want to watch the fucking show either. I don't like those shows like that. Okay.
More fantasy-ish than science fiction-ish.
So that's the thing.
Implausible. And then there's a big, like, explosion, and then they go back and forth through time, and, you know, all kinds of things are happening like that, so.
Okay, so that's why I'm not interested in the show. Okay, all right, no problem. I haven't missed anything. Okay, good. All right. Okay, it's going to be over today.
And nobody send me any spoilers, because I'm still watching episodes from, like, February, so.
You're going to find that hard to avoid, but anyway.
I know, but, you know, I'll try.
Okay. Anyway, all right, we're done. That's it.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us, and as usual, email me at obblesmay@obblesmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, reactions to what we have said, anything along those lines, suggestions for things we should talk about in the future. Other than that, as usual, tell your friends. I said as usual like 5 times, which sucks, but anyway. Anyway, as usual. So, everybody, talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
See you, Mr. Bo.
Bye-bye.